Headline from the Philadelphia Daily News. Eagle attacks Volkswagen. Melrose, New Mexico. An eagle swooped down on a Volkswagen near Melrose, New Mexico, Saturday, and attacked the two rabbit hunters inside. It looked as though the eagle was primarily interested in the Volkswagen itself. Oh. Eagle attacks Volkswagen. Now, I wonder whether or not there are many of you out there who feel that slight crawling, thrilling, chilling, oozing, pimpling movement up your backbone. A fear oozing up through your... Oh. Eagle attacks Volkswagen. I can't help it. Now, speaking of fear, I'm listening to... was that here? Why is it so quiet here tonight? Hello, can't hear anything in here tonight. Is it just no, the equipment isn't working tonight? It's very quiet. Nothing here. Huh. Hello. It's very. How do you, anything's coming through? Turn the knob. Oh, it's all right. That's okay. You mean it's dirty? Well, a lot of things are around here, you know. I listened to. No, that's okay. Now you stay out of here. I know how to work this equipment here. Quit fooling around. You know, I'm listening to the market reports. Just a couple of minutes ago, there with who was that? Harry there or Henry? Henry? Harry Hennessy on there, huh? And he's going along with all those numbers. And I was immediately reminded of a thing which I was part of. Actually, I was more of a spectator to it, but I was part of it, of the great false market report scare that swept through Toledo, Ohio. And I don't know whether or not I should tell a story. Oh, there you go. You got it back again. What happened? Oh, it just came through there. You just turned something. Came through good. Oh, I see. Bad contacts. Well, I've had bad contacts all my life, Dad. Tell me, listen, I bet on plenty of wrong guy in my time. But I don't know whether to tell this story, not because the whole confidence of the American people in the officialness of the numbers that they hear on the radio all the time could be easily undermined. Because people believe when they hear on the radio, when the guy says it's now 17 minutes past 12 noon, that it actually is 17 minutes past 12 noon. People believe that when the radio says it's 37 degrees, it is 37 degrees. No fooling around. Should I tell the story of the great market scare that resulted in at least 400 almost suicides in a friendly Midwestern American city? All right, I'll tell you the story. Now, most people who live in studio land, just like as is the case with most people who live in newspaper land, the world becomes a story. It is not a reality. The world becomes a series of columns, which you feel. You put down print. That actual events become hooks upon which things are hung. In short, do you understand what I'm saying here? That there is a certain almost unbelievable unreality that begins to exist within the confines of a newspaper office or a radio station, any newsroom. Now, they like to think that they're very realistic, that they're really hooked up with events, but they're hooked up with events less than you are. Why? Well, simple enough. Because they have to write about them all the time. That does not mean that they even think about them. Because they have to write about so many different things. And the machine in the corner just keeps going. Out comes this stuff, hour after hour after hour. It's a very scary thing to walk down the hall here at 2 o'clock in the morning and the news machines are still pounding it out when there are no newsmen around. It's going. Well, for this very reason, if you're surrounded, it's like a bartender is surrounded by all the most fantastic exotic drinks in the world. In the end, he just winds up not even noticing, not even knowing they're there. And most drunks who come reeling in think that this guy really thinks about drinking and knows about it. He's just not involved at all. He's just handing it out, mixing it, passing it out, so on. Well, so it is with the newspaper world. Very difficult. And in a radio station particularly, you have a group of guys, generally, who are involved in something else, too, as well as purveying the news. They're involved in performing, which, yes, it's like a play. It's like an actor. An actor will perform in a play, and you ask him 2 or 3 days after he's dropped out of the part, he won't even remember the lines. You ask him anything about the plot, he won't quite remember it. Are you aware of that? He'll say, oh yes, Death of a Salesman. That's about that, what was he? The guy that, something about the territory. I remember one up to Boston. But Charlie, you played Willie Loman yourself! Oh yeah, Willie, that was, Willie Loman, oh yeah, and the thing in the hotel room, oh, I remember that, yeah. Oh yes, of course, and he dies, yeah, that's right, I remember that great scene, death scene, yeah, I remember that. Well, please tell me, Charlie, what was the inner motivation of Willie at that time when he made the phone call? A phone call. Hello, Biff, yeah. Come on, get off my back, will you? Well, you don't really remember. And so it's hard to tell this to people who think that the newsman, he reads the news, you know, oh, boy, he really thinks about Korea. He really thinks about Indochina. You know, he really thinks. Well, let me tell you what happened in Toledo, Ohio. Now, most of the guys that are working in radio are city types, begin with. And most of them, again, are not investor types. They don't invest in the market, really. They talk about it. Once in a while, you'll find a guy who will. But most of the people, it's just a series of numbers. The Dun and Bradstreet, or the averages, or the cost of living index, these are numbers that they fill in, like 17, 22, 38. Somebody calls them in. You write them down on the form. It's like the guy who's continually talking about the traffic conditions out on the Grand Concourse, who never drives out there. It's just fair to Midland. Or the weather conditions in North Dakota, moderately hot, he writes. Well, one time, I was working in this radio station where every noonday they had, immediately following the noon news, they had the livestock reports. They had in this radio station, apparently there were a lot of farmers, but you never think in terms of real listeners, you know? Get letters, those letters. But real listeners out there who actually act on what you say. And so every noon, the guy would come on with the news, and then after the 12:15 news, he would say, and now here is Paul Nash with today's market reports, direct from the Toledo livestock markets. Good afternoon, livestock fans. The markets closed at noon this way. The yearling beef sales were 17.42 and a half, up 14% on the four-nounder, moderately sized pigs, and he would go on, you see, with these numbers. Well, here's exactly the way it worked. I'll have to tell you. The Paul Nash involved was just an announcer who was from Chicago. He never got close to a pig any closer than, that's another story. I'll tell you that story about her later on, but that's another story. Anyway, this guy never had any involvements at all like that, and he was strictly a city type, a pool player, the guy that talked out of the side of his mouth, had a checkered vest, that kind of thing, and was a true itinerant radio man. Well, every day at exactly 5 minutes to 12, the phone would ring in the newsroom, and somebody would say, Paul Nash there, Hennessy from the markets, and they would get him. And then he would start giving these numbers. He would just go down to the yearling sales. He would say, yearling sales, shoats, moderate-sized pigs, sows. He would say, beef cattle, veal, all the way down the line, all the various classifications, pullets, spring-fed lambs, all the way down. And Nash had a form. Now, the form was already written out. It was mimeographed and everything, and it just started out at the top. It says, here are today's market closing reports from the Toledo Livestock Market. Today, yearling sales went over, and they would have these things all written down, just like we have our traffic reports. All you would have to do would be to fill in the numbers with a pencil. Well, they were just numbers. Well, Nash, on this fateful day, waited by the phone, and nothing happened. Well, the phone didn't ring. So it is now 12 noon, and it is now 12:10. Still no calls. Nash is standing there. Well, Nash takes a pencil, and without doing any, he just writes down a bunch of numbers. He just wrote numbers down there, and they all sounded good. 49 and a half, up 7%. 17 and a half, a drop of 0.5 cent a pound. You know, all very official numbers. Spring eggs, 37 cents a dozen. And Wheeler Wheat is now going for, and he just filled in a lot of numbers that sounded familiar. You see, he'd been reading these for like a year. These numbers just sounded like good and round numbers. Well, that day, Nash comes on. He goes on the air. Oh, the reason he did it was because the show was sponsored. I mean, you got a sponsored show, you don't check it out. So 12:15 comes on, and the announcer says, and now here is Paul Nash with today's market's results from the Toledo market. Oh, this is Paul Nash. Today, yearling sales went up 7%. He starts to go, and about, I'd say, it was only a five-minute show. He was in the show about 3 minutes when the switchboard lit up like an insane Christmas tree. It goes like that. And there's this little fat girl who relieved the other fat girl. And the little fat girl from the library is on the switchboard answering the phone. She can't figure out what's going on. What's going on? What is this? All these angry people are calling in. What is this? And she comes running into me. I'm sitting in there half asleep in the announcer's lounge. She says, what's Nash doing? Speaking of sleep, this is WOR AM at FM New York. What's Nash doing? I said, I don't know. It sounded okay to me. And it's just coming out, and I pick up one of the phones. She says, well, please answer the phone. There was nobody else around that was official. And I pick up the phone, and there's a guy crying on the phone. He says, what's going on? What? He just said, would you please have him check the figure on Yearling Labs? Will you please, for crying out loud, quick, would you have me? He says, I'm ruined. And I said, what? What's the matter? Well, I didn't know what to say, so I said, well, I'm sorry, sir, I'll have to check. He says, well, where do you get these? I said, well, these come right from the market, you know, these figures come right from the Toledo market. And I hung up. I pick up the phone again, and there's another one there. It went on for 10 minutes. Nash comes quietly wandering in. He is now off the air. I said, Nash, what happened? He said, what do you mean, what happened? I said, Nash, for crying out loud, can you hear that? Look at the people running in the streets out there. We opened the window, you could see people running in the streets, wild-eyed farmers are plunging out of bars, guys are hanging on window ledges, about to go off. It seems that Nash had rocked the entire market. Just by these abstract figures, these little lines that mean nothing. And from that day on, I have always remembered how many, there must be millions of people, literally, in America, who live by numbers. Just little abstract numbers. I wonder how many guys are depressed for weeks because of what is that index? I don't even know the name of it. Dun & Bradstreet Index? Market Index? What is that? That thing they always come on and say 548, whatever that index is. These funny little numbers. These little things, you know. I wonder how many guys who have owned a stock for 25 years still get terrible feelings in their stomach every time a number comes in. This, oh, speaking of numbers, we have here. Let's get the... Hey, come on, Eddie. Let's go. Come on. One, two, three. All right. Hit it hard.
When you're shopping...
I'm sorry. I just feel that way. You know, speaking of... let's get the business out of the way. If you're going to... Let's see. Tick, 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 tick. Okay. Yojimbo. Oh, boy, these people. Now, speaking of the insidious Oriental mind, we have also the Mandarin House with us. Now, that takes care of one, two, three, opera promotion. What's with the opera here? Die Meistersinger vom Nürnberg. It says, Die Meistersinger vom Nürnberg. That's it. That's the opera tomorrow. Okay? And let's see, we have another one here about the TV thing. There's a big all-night, one of these whoopee-thons all night it's going to go on with. It hurt my knees along about the line. You know, speaking of hurting your knees, as long as you're going to play the phony, there was an article that came in, which, you know, I'm fascinated by our approach or our attack towards life this past couple of weeks since the newspapers have been out of action. I'm curious. I'm just curious whether or not things are still going on, as long as you don't read about them. One of my friends talked to a guy who's a reporter, and of course his newspaper's out, so he's just sitting around at home scratching, and once in a while he looks at television, and he's real nervous because he thinks that there's all kinds of rotten, nefarious deals going on down at City Hall, and that they're selling out when he isn't down there to write stories about it. He really does, you know? And he said that to my friend. He says, boy, he says, no, tell them what they're doing down there. Rout the rascals out! And everyone vaguely feels that they should cut out everything as long as the newspapers are out. City Hall should stop. Just stop running for the next 2 or 3 weeks until the newspapers get back. And the shows, too, of course, have the same thing. I wonder whether or not people go to shows because they want to go to shows. You know, it seems to me that if a person really does have a hunger for the theater, he will go to the theater whether there are newspapers or not. I am now beginning to wonder how much of this great interest we have in the theater, this great interest we have in movies, is not all artificially generated by the newspapers. Because the minute the newspapers stop, guys stop going to shows. Yeah, it's true. Even hit shows, though, Eddie. I mean, Carnival is throwing in the sponge. Half a dozen of them have decided to quit. Now, the point I'm making here is how much of the world or the needs or the desires or the terrible passions that we have, how much of it is purely paper passion? Now, I'm not saying that it's phony or anything. I'm just curious. I'm wondering about that. Just a little curiosity. Another thing that relates to the same thing, I wonder whether or not an axe murderer would hold off until after the strike because his coverage would be bad. You know? I mean, what fun is it to do something really great out in Brooklyn, like run amok? Unless the news is down there covering it, and the Journal American sends Dorothy Kilgallen. You know, what good is that? And it says, Warren, one of my friends who is a newspaper reporter, you'll hear him in about 5 minutes, he sends me a note and he says, how about sports fans who go to games and then read newspapers to learn what the heck they saw? Ain't it the truth? Yes, I know. It's very disconcerting for a man to attend a game and not have it analyzed by Bill Corum or Red Smith, you know, and sit back there and think he saw a good game. And then weeks later, it turns out, and it's very depressing for a theater fan to go and laugh his guts out at a play, and then 3 weeks later, get the newspaper and find out that Walter Kerr said it was a real clinker, not a laugh on a bucket, you know? It's true. A lot of this stuff is... Now, I wonder, can you really officially get angry at, say, chicanery overseas unless Jimmy Reston tells you what to get mad about? How you should feel, whether or not you should be bugged by this little straw in the wind, or whether or not, you know, you should even be concerned at all over the straw in the wind. They're all fascinating problems. And of course, there is another thing, too, I notice about this, that people have a deep fear that something is happening they don't know about, something really important. But you know what's liable to happen if this newspaper strike goes on long enough? People will forget about it, and they'll just start doing their own funny business. You know, they'll start doing their own jazz, and they will stop worrying about Marie Albergetti. And Zsa Zsa Gabor will slip into the background. Do you realize how many scared people there are in show business who know their only hold on the public is that they keep popping up in columns all the time? And there are no columns. They will disappear, believe me, like the Lusitania. They will sink below the waves forever. It's true. And a lot of things exist only as publicity stunts or gimmicks or attitudes that are newspaper attitudes. Seriously. So it disappears, and it's gone forever. Well, I'm wondering whether or not, in the end of about 4 or 5 weeks, if this thing could go on for 6 months and the newspapers come back again, nobody would buy them. They would be reading about a lot of people they don't care about anymore. Seriously, you know, people forget awfully fast in this world, and they readjust awfully quickly. And I'm here, another thing. Do you know that they have noticed a strange reaction among television ratings in the past month since the newspaper strike? Now, there are a lot of people who don't buy TV Guide, you know, and who just read what Earl Wilson is saying about, you know, the big new Sacco show that so-and-so is doing. And they get their TV habits from these strange places. Now, so what's happening is that they are really going over the dial now. And they're finding all kinds of shows that don't get publicity. People keep wondering whether or not. And oh, yes, you know, speaking of the newspaper syndrome, I've often wondered why people will read newspaper critics at all. I'm talking about newspaper TV critics. To tell you about a show that you saw yesterday that you'll never see again, to tell you it was a clinker. Now, I don't know, you know. I'm just, this has always been fascinating to me. Of course, the mind of the column reader has always eluded me anyway. Here comes another note from the height of snobbery. A new paper coming out for credit card company specifies only Times or Tribune newspaper men. Does this mean I can't use my credit card as a dirty old hearse man? Well, of course, that's all part of the problem. I just wonder what would happen to America. You know, there's no country that is more deeply involved in vicarious experience than America. We are deeply involved in it, and as a matter of fact, we genuinely live by it now, that a vicarious experience has become a real experience to an American. And so Eddie Fisher's problem what was her name? That big chick. What was her name? The big one. You know the one I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, that one, yeah. What was her name? Oh, Audrey Hepburn. Yeah. No, it wasn't. That was the big one. You know, the big one with the beetling brother. Yeah, yeah, you know the one. The big porch, you know the one. Yeah, yeah, that one. Yeah, Elizabeth Taylor, that's right. I've almost forgotten already, see? And a lot of people literally lived that. Really. And they get very angry when you tell them, look, Eddie Fisher doesn't care about you, doesn't even know you. Charlie? And believe it, forget it. Elizabeth Taylor couldn't care less what you think. They get very angry. They'll call up and they'll say, what is this guy doing? What does he mean saying that about Elizabeth Taylor? They'll call right up here and say it. I said, I'm not talking about Elizabeth Taylor. I'm talking about our world, Dad. Because so many of us really live vicariously. That Rawhide, a guy sees Rawhide, and by George, he becomes 6.5 feet tall, lean, thin, angry. He belts. Well, here's this little short, fat guy, this beer drinker, with the plaster falling down from the top of his, you know, he's just sitting there, and he is this thing for this 30 minutes. And then they play the theme, and the next minute, he's playing with the Celtics. Boy, he's moving, you know? Yeah, that's true. He goes right from the range right down there, and he's playing those beautiful hook shots he's belting in, you know, over his shoulder. And then about 10 minutes later, he's swinging around there with Priscilla Lane in a 1937 movie, sitting right there in the back seat with Bing Crosby. And this is all vicarious, all vicarious. Well, now, the point I'm making here, what would happen? Gee, wouldn't this would make a great short story, The Day It All Stopped. If, for one solid month, there was no radio, no television at all telephones were cut off, all newspapers, no magazines, there were no ads, there were no critics, and we all just sat for one solid month and stewed in our own juices. No jukeboxes, no folk singers. No Allen Ginsberg, no Jack Kerouac, no J.D. Salinger. No Rip Torn, no Geraldine Page, no Shelley Winters. Just us chickens. Scratching, fretting. Digging. Waiting. Talking, worrying, complaining. Oh, come back, George Maharis. Don't ever do that to me, Merv Griffin, don't. Oh, Eric Severide. Please come back, Walter, and Cronkite some more. Lucy. Dobie Gillis. Hi, Miss Dorothy Kilgallen. All that complaining. I never realized that the price is right. Oh, boy, that's a scary thought, isn't it, Ed? Oh, boy. Oh, we live by this stuff. We devour it. We eat it. It's more important to an American today than air, than water, than fire, than. Oh, sometimes the human mind just goes running on and on and on and on and on and on and on. It never. Eagle attacks Volkswagen. We now bring you The Singing Lady. Stay tuned for the news, the weather, the THI, the station break, a Ballantine beer commercial. Yes, friends, stay tuned for life itself. Howard K. Smith views the news. And now, through Telstar, we bring you an interview with Winston Churchill, Diana Doors, Elvis Presley, Pandit Nehru, Nikita Khrushchev, Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, the King of Jazz, Paul Whiteman. All these and other important facets of your life are brought to you every day at this same time. Over 4,000 channels, 522 stations, 16 million column feet, and the very air you breathe. Before we leave, friends, don't forget to patronize your favorite sponsor for our life. It was just like any other day in history, except you were there. Bonds. Yes, it's 99.44% pure, friends. It really floats. And so will you. Yes, you'll just bob like a cork on that vast cocoa malt sea of life. Keep your old knees loose.